This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Tuesday, 4th of April, 2023, and we have crude oil prices galloping higher. We have a very weak U.S. ISM manufacturing number yesterday, and especially the new orders coming in at 44.3, looking quite soft. Of course, the manufacturing sector is not the big focus in the U.S. It's the services side of things. Still, celebrating the fact that we get weak data that sees yields lower and just chooses to ignore, I suppose, the developments in crude oil markets. That's the lay of the land as I see it. I'm a bit confused here about the market reaction function, Peter. I don't know what you say, and we also need to highlight our Q2 outlook, but I'll let you I'll throw you to the market commentary, and then we'll talk a little bit about that Q2 outlook.
Yeah, impressive that this market and hereby I'm thinking about the equity market can continue to propel higher basically. And but if you zoom in on the industry group's performance yesterday, so the car makers were the worst performers, obviously driven by Tesla, which was down. I mean, there are always just high expectations in Tesla shares. I mean, they did beat on the Q1 deliveries, but you know, the headlines that was thrown around was that they're not living up to the 50% annualized growth target, yada yada yada. But so there was a decline there. But there was really the energy story, as Ole talked about yesterday, with the surprise OPEC cut and the galloping oil prices that really lifted the entire global energy sector by almost 5%. I mean, if you strip out that sector gain there, the most of the gains for yesterday were not really there. So I think you should downplay a little bit the move yesterday. So today's move is going to be more important because that will confirm whether we're willing to buy these levels. But as we've highlighted, equity valuations are getting stretched here. Credit conditions are pretty tight. There are more and more cracks coming out of the real estate sector. We know that's one of the big collateral drivers of banks' balance sheets. So what will that mean for credit transmission? Et cetera. The probability of a recession going higher. So maybe that's the question we have in the quick take today. Is this as good as it gets for equities? And now is the real test. I mean, I really find it hard to see why we should just continue to push high given the outlook that we're looking into.
Yeah, and speaking of outlooks, our quarterly outlook is out. The Q2 quarterly outlook entitled "The Fragmentation Game." What we mean by fragmentation is essentially our word for deglobalization. We feel like fragmentation is a better word because it describes how the world is sort of splitting up into interest areas, fragmenting into blocks. Plenty of global trade still happening. It's just that people are looking to make sure that it's with friendly parts of their own fragment, if you will. Of course, we're seeing massive industrial policy aimed at ensuring supply chains within the various fragments. A lot of this, of course, with the U.S.-China rivalry that is deepening. We have the U.S. Chips and Science Act, the IRA and Inflation Reduction Act investments. We have Europe really needing to move full speed forward on all fronts. The vulnerabilities, of course, of U.S.-China rivalry as well, but also because the Russian invasion of Ukraine suddenly cut off their source of cheap energy at the margin, and they need to reconfigure for that. All of roads leading with this sort of industrial policy focus and these new imperatives to invest and ensure that your supply chains for all things manufactured, semiconductor, resources, etc., that they're all within within reach and secure, and national security itself as well on the defense side. So all roads leading to inflation on that front. And then as we were composing our Q2 outlook, this whole banking turmoil dropped right in the middle of that. So we also can spend considerable energy discussing the implications of the banking turmoil. The general assessment, broad brush, is that it is leading to a tightening of credit standards because of the funding costs for banks, which will mean that the eventual recession, has been pulled forward by this. A classic credit cycle, not necessarily any risk of financial or systemic crisis. And we saw actually with the Silicon Valley Bank situation how quickly the authorities move in this day and age with the pandemic playbook in mind, etc. So those are our assessments. You can see on slide 2 the overview. We've also tweeted it out on the Saxo Market Call Twitter account, etc. Have a look at that outlook, and I think you'll find some interesting reading in there for sure. It's a global effort from the Saxo strategy team. All right. And then I'll briefly round out my comments here, at least for what market developments on the FX side of things. We have a weak U.S. dollar. I suppose a lot of that is, you know, the combination of lower U.S. yields and strong risk sentiment. With equity markets closing higher, that's a classic 1-2 of factors that'll see a weaker dollar, and that's what we saw. So we have Eurodollar pushing on this resistance. Is it going to break? It certainly is a pesky resistance there above 109, as I show on slide 4, 109 and 109.30 area. We would need to see an extension of this environment, lower yields, I suppose, but sort of with a benign assessment of the implication of why yields are going lower for this dollar to continue lower here at the moment. Somewhat oddly, we have also a weak Japanese yen. I find that somewhat strange given the lower yields. Typically, this would be very supportive for the Japanese yen. There may be some focus on oil prices. That spike there is, of course, negative for Japan's current account situation with their reliance on foreign energy imports. But we're also getting our legs here in a new Japanese financial year. Yesterday was the first day of that new financial year. We're waiting for the Kuroda to leave the next week, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe a bit tough to assess just from one day's action what's going on with the Japanese yen here. And then the Aussie, somewhat interesting action because it was kind of on its back foot because we're expecting nothing from the RBA. That's what the RBA delivered last night. But ahead of this meeting we had last night, there was a report out on Australian home prices with a massive advance in Sydney's prices for the month. 1.4% in March, and actually Australian home prices rose in general for that month for the first time after 10 months of consecutive decline. So I suspect a lot of shorts were sort of bailing on their positions ahead of the meeting, but perhaps at the margin interesting that the Aussie dollar nonetheless stuck above its 200-day moving average despite that RBA no-go. Still a tightening bias in the statement that was retained, and this hold was sort of positioned as gives the RBA some time to think about the situation. We have the RBNZ up tonight, as I'll preview on the macro calendar later. But let's get over to some other markets because we really need to talk about the follow-on action in oil. I think if I recall, Ole, you were pointing out there's quite a gap here in the prices with that gap opening after the weekend's OPEC production cut announcement. And gold remains in focus with this weak dollar and falling yields.
Indeed, John, and it was interesting to watch the two markets yesterday, and especially I would say the gold market reaction early on to the weekend announcement that OPEC had cut production, because obviously it raised concerns about sharply higher prices in the oil market. But I think as the day progressed, we basically saw the gold market come to the same conclusion as OPEC had come to over the weekend, that they were seeing an incoming slowdown, economic slowdown, and they had to preempt that by cutting production in order to maintain a stable high price for their obviously most priced assets, and I think that's the conclusion for now at least. So that's the main reason for the surprise production cut. So what it meant basically in the gold market was that the initial worries about the rate cuts that had been priced in that they would be lowered or be reduced, that didn't materialize. So that gave them gold a bit, and then obviously later in the day we had a weak ISM number, which took it back up to near the $2,000, which remains a key area of resistance at this point in time. But looking over the crude oil market, we are. Yes, it was a big jump yesterday, but it was primarily just clawing back some of the losses that we saw during the March sell-off. And considering that the average price we've seen since November is close to 83, we're not far away from that. So I think for now the jury is still out whether we are actually going to see sharply higher prices. I doubt it. I think we will settle back into this range that we've seen now for the past few months. And with that in mind, as I said, mind the gap. This is historically gaps in the market. It's not something that the traders they like to see, and then they will take any opportunity to close them. Whether that's going to be possible this time around remains to be seen. But just be careful, because we have this $3 gap both in WTI and Brent, and that potentially may act as a little bit of a magnet to the downside.
Yeah, and you've talked a lot about wheat as well. There's some crop conditions that are a concern in the U.S., and then the different types of wheat, quite a spread going on, as you point out on slide 6.
Yes, indeed. We have quite a development in the U.S. right now. The so-called hard red winter wheat, which is primarily produced, Kansas is the center for that, but the southern plains, they are going through some very, very dismal crop conditions right now. It's basically dropped to 28% of the crop rated good to excellent last week. That's the lowest since 1996. And that's been driving the Kansas hard red winter wheat contract higher to the extent that the spread of the premium over the Chicago wheat contract, which is the one we normally trade and focus on, has right now to a record 184 cents a bushel. And that just highlights some of the stress that we're seeing in the Kansas Kansas contract. But at the same time, we got an extension to winds in the Northern Plains, where we and that's basically raising concerns about delay to the planting. Normally not a big issue, but at least it's raising some concerns for now. At the same time, we've got bone dry conditions in the Canadian farmlands, raising also concerns about the moisture levels ahead of the planting of wheat and canola. Canola, just for you in Europe, that's basically rapeseed. But all in all, it's just difficult to see any major downside risks for wheat at this moment in time.
All right. You talked about as well in the morning update, our quick take, you put in there's Chilean copper mines. Chile is the highest or largest producer of copper in the world. And then, Peter, you've got a story, one of these resource companies or mining companies, also looking at the copper business here.
Yeah, you have Teck Resources, which is one of Canada's largest mining companies, if not the largest, which has rejected, or the board of directors rejected yesterday, a 20% takeover premium offer from Glencore. Obviously, Glencore is not interested. It's an almost $18 billion business total, with a little bit more than $10 billion in the steel making coal business, as they call that segment. And then the remaining business, around $7 or $8 billion, is split between zinc and copper, with copper being around $3.4 billion annual copper business. And that, of course, is the asset that Glencore wants. But Teck Resources rejected that offer, saying that they're already in the midst of a process of splitting the company into the coal business and what is in the future going to be called Teck Metals, which is then the zinc and copper businesses. And the board of directors said that after the split, which will be likely approved in late April on the annual general meeting, will then lead to the board being more open for takeover bids. But then they will, of course, want a bidding auction on they know that the copper business is going to be super attractive. And it's something Ole have mentioned already, that there is a massive acquisition activity in the copper industry overall. So that's one news. And what an incredible run up in the share price there. We show the 5-year price chart on Teck Resources on slide 7 there. Phenomenal returns for shareholders, for sure. And then the other story we have is Illumina, which is the world's largest sequencing and microarray solution provider to genomics analysis. They've been ordered by the FTC to divest its acquisition of early stage cancer detection company called Grail. They bought that for $7 billion in 2021. The FTC, but also the EU regulators, are afraid or worried that this acquisition will hamper innovation and competition. And their technology seems to be pretty innovative. Grail, they have some very good results. They're running a massive pilot project here in the EU. Lots of patients enrolled in the UK for this early stage cancer detection. So that's it's a big blow potentially to the future growth rates of Illumina. That they have to do this. They are already appealing the decision, but which will get an expedite process so we can get this closed finally. So hopefully for Illumina, that will be by before the end of the year.
All right, and then you have earnings to watch this week. I noticed you put in a nice little graphic spread of Conagra brands, different brands they have, consumer brands. As an American, I recognize many of these, and especially the Vlasic pickles. As an American here in Europe, really adrift, I can't find a decent pickle relative to my background, which is a nice sour one. You guys like sweet stuff here. Usually Americans are accused of only liking sweet stuff, and it's always too sweet. Why can't you make any nice sour pickles here in Europe is what I'd like to know. But that's probably not something you can answer. I guess it's probably the most interesting name on your overview here on the slide, slide 8.
Yeah, funny background story you give there, John, because I was looking at these brands, and as a young European, I'm looking at these brands.
Young, I'm not so sure about young, Peter, but not old, but not young.
Come on, 38. But in any case, I've never heard about any of these brands before. So for me, it's very new. But we highlighted earlier, and actually last week, that this week of earnings are really just it's just in wait and see mode. We're waiting for the Q1 earnings that will start late next week on Friday with the first US financials, and then we'll slowly kick into gear. So, but I just highlighted Conagra Brands because it's a consumer-oriented business. It's always interesting. You can see from the forecast of sales that they barely increasing revenue beyond the inflation rate. Maybe you can actually argue a little bit less. So, as we have seen with so many other consumer companies, there is a deterioration in volume sold, basically. And it's just something we'll track. It's just curious to hear what they say. Are these inflation pressures, are they easing in any way? I suspect they are, but so we'll track Conagra Brands and talk about it tomorrow's podcast.
Yeah, and classically, shoppers that are under price pressures would do the down switching into store brands sometimes rather than the premium brands for different food items. So yeah, it would be interesting, that one. All right, let's roll forward to the macro calendar today. I think I've previewed a couple things. The RBNZ is up tonight, really, the Wednesday session in Asia. They're expected to hike 25 basis points. This is on the sort of deceleration from the November 75 basis point hike, then the February 50 basis point hike, and 25 basis points expected tonight. More interesting is the guidance with 25 further basis points priced into the forward curve, but could the RBNZ make like the RBA and the Bank of Canada in sort of position for a pause here, or at least some optionality around maybe we will hike, maybe we won't next time? That would be the potentially slightly dovish scenario there. I don't think we're going to see an acceleration to the hawkish side. So if there's any, to my mind, risk lean, the risk would be for a dovish deceleration rather on the guidance rather than the opposite. If we look at the other bits and pieces, that JOLTS survey, the noise I've been reading and looking at in that survey relative to some other surveys, I'm wanting to heavily discount that survey. Also, keep in mind, this is from February, so we're looking more, especially now after this banking turmoil, we're really looking to the most forward data we can get, so that not really much of that today. But we do get ISM services up tomorrow. 54.4 expected after the 55.1 in February. ADP as well, private payrolls. And very strangely, this still on the BLS's website that we will see a jobs report this Friday with markets closed. Perhaps this has happened before. I need to go back in history to find out if on Good Friday, a market holiday, the BLS has been releasing its data points. So imagine if there's a shocker of a surprise in there and you can't really trade it except in perhaps in FX, although you know much of Europe is closed as well, but liquidity has to be rather poor. But no bond market or no equity market to express your view. So just keep that in mind, and I'll try to keep on top of whether that release actually will happen on Friday. Okay, that's a wrap for today. Have a look at our Q2 outlook again on the banking turmoil, our outlook for that, and as well as the fragmentation game and how it can impact your portfolio. It's a massive theme, really. It's not just Q2. It's really Q2 plus a decade or more, that theme. So I think there'll be plenty to chew on in terms of the fragmentation game. That's it for today. We'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.